included, considered her the luckiest of young women. Her mother would be horrified, though unsurprised, by Olivia's lame jest linking the dukedom with a curse. To her parents, it was manifestly clear that their daughter's ascension of the social ranks was a piece of singular good fortune. In short, a blessing.
"Thank God," Mr. Lytton had said, 5,000 times since Olivia was born. "If I hadn't gone to Eton..."
It was a story that Olivia and her twin sister Georgiana had loved when they were little. They would perch on their papa's knees and listen to the thrilling tale of how he, plain, unremarkable, albeit connected to an earl on one side, as well as a bishop and a marquis on the other, Mr. Lytton, had gone to Eton and become best friends with the Duke of Cantwick, who had inherited his grand title at the tender age of 5. At some point, the boys had sworn a blood oath that Mr. Lytton's eldest daughter would become a duchess by marrying the Duke of Cantwick's eldest son. Mr. Lytton showed giddy enthusiasm in doing his part to ensure this eventuality, producing not one but two daughters within a year of marriage. The Duke of Cantwick, for his part, produced only one son, and that after a few years of marriage, but obviously one son was sufficient for the task at hand. Most importantly, His Grace kept his word and regularly reassured Mr. Lytton about the destined betrothal. Consequently, the proud parents of the Duchess-to-be did everything in their power to prepare their first-born daughter, the elder by a good 7 minutes, for the title that was to be bestowed upon her, sparing no expense in shaping the future Duchess of Cantwick. Olivia was tutored from the moment she left the cradle. By 10 years of age, she was expert in the finer points of etiquette, the management of country estates, including double-entry accounting, playing the harpsichord and the spinet, greeting people in various languages, including Latin, useful for visiting bishops, if no one else, and even in French cooking, though her knowledge of the last was intellectual rather than practical. Duchesses never actually touched food, except to eat it. She also had a thorough knowledge of her mother's favourite tome, The Mirror of Compliments, a complete academy for the attaining unto the art of being a lady, which was written by no less a personage than Her Grace, the Dowager Duchess of Sconce, and given to the girls on their 12th birthday. In fact, Olivia's mother had read The Mirror of Compliments so many times that it had taken over her conversation, rather like ivy smothering a tree.
"Gentility,"
she had said the morning before the Micklethwaite ball, over marmalade and toast,
"is bestowed on us by our ancestors, but soon blanched when not revived by virtue."
Olivia had nodded. She herself was a firm believer in the benefits of blanching gentility, but long experience had taught her that expressing such an opinion would merely give her mother a headache.
"A young lady,"
Mrs. Lytton had announced on the way to the Micklethwaite ball,
"loathes nothing so much as entering parley with an immodest suitor."
Olivia knew better than to inquire about how one parleyed with an immodest suitor. The ton understood that she was betrothed to the Duke of Cantwick's heir, and therefore suitors, immodest or otherwise, rarely bothered to approach. Generally speaking, she tabled that sort of advice for the future, when she hoped to indulge in any number of immodest parleys.
"Did you see Lord Webb dancing with Mrs. Shottery?"
Olivia asked her sister as they walked into her bedchamber.
"It's quite affecting to watch them stare into each other's eyes. I must say, the ton seems to take their wedding vows about as seriously as do the French, and everyone says that inclusion of marital fidelity into French wedding vows turned them a splendid work of fiction."
"Olivia," Georgiana groaned, "you mustn't. And you wouldn't, would you?"
"Are you asking whether I will ever be unfaithful to my fiancé once he's my husband, if that day ever arrives?"
Georgiana nodded. "I suppose not," Olivia said, though secretly she sometimes wondered if she might just snap one day and break every social rule by running off to Rome with a footman.
"The only part of the evening I really enjoyed was when Lord Pomptinius told me a limerick about an adulterous abbot."
"Don't you dare repeat it,"
her sister ordered.
Georgiana had never shown the faintest.